and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we tell you each week, these conversations include you, and if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. 941-3689 is the number if you call us from Oahu, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, anywhere else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Tonight on Town Square, as part of our series based on the value of Hawaii Volume 2, we're going to talk about youth activism, island style. What defines it now? How much power does it really wield? And what social change is it driving? Those are just some of the questions our panel will consider, and they are well equipped to do it. Sitting around our table at the moment, we have Lisa Grandinetti, student at UH Manoa. She works to promote economic equality, workers' rights, and social justice, and now she's involved with the IKEA movement. James Koshiba is also here. You know him as the co-founder and former executive director of the sustainability organization Kanu Hawaii. And later in the show, we'll be joined by John Prime Hina, founder of 808 Urban. Of course, you're here too, and the phone lines are open, 941-3689, 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. Welcome. Thanks for being here. It's been a while.
Thanks for having us, Beth.
When you think about activism, everyone gets a picture in his or her mind about what an activist is. So let's just start there. What's your picture of an activist? James, you can go first.
Maybe I'll back up one step and just say a bit about Kanu Hawaii for those who aren't familiar with it. And I should make it clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of the organization because I stepped down as the executive director last year. But the idea behind Kanu was that everyone could be an activist in their own way. And the principle, Kanu's a Hawaiian word that literally means to plant, but it's also used figuratively to mean passed down by inheritance from ancestors. And it was started by a group of folks at the time we were in our 20s and early 30s. And the notion was that we wanted to try to preserve and protect and promote those things about Hawaii that we love and that we hoped would be around for generations to come. And we were searching for a way to do that. And partly because we were a group of people that didn't have a lot of power and resources, we sort of looked at each other around the table and said, the way to start is with ourselves. And so we kind of stood up one by one and said, here's the thing, here's the change I can make in my own life to model a more sustainable, compassionate, and resilient future for Hawaii, which were kind of the core words of our mission statement, the core values we wanted to promote. And so in that act, I think each of us became activists in a way. It sort of activated us, or you might say kind of politicized us, broadly speaking. And the lesson for us was that striving for change in our own lives was a political act, and that it could also be a leadership act that encouraged other people around us to change with us.
Ergo, the campaign that started off, I Will.
Right, right, exactly.
Okay. You have been doing activism since you have been involved with school. Mm-hmm. Does that feel different from what you just heard James describe as an activist?
Well, I think activism can be anything from shopping at Goodwill to going to a rally and forming coalitions with other people who are like-minded. But I do agree that with his definition of activism, but in bringing it more into the youth sphere, I think a lot of the time you kind of just think of one image, like a long-haired hippie or, you know, like a, I don't know, the stereotypical vision of an activist. But for the youth, it really can be anyone, because I think a lot of the youth are at a point where they're angry and they don't know what to do. And just in their personal lives, trying to grow up into adulthood is a very frustrating time. But then there's that added component of trying to understand all the problems we face. And specifically in Hawaii, it's very complicated. So for youth, I think it's hard to get past your personal problems and get involved in activism. But at the same time, there's that sort of relation between the frustration of being in college or in high school, and then the frustration of things really not going our way as local people, as working people. And I think that connection can really be used to light the fire under youth activism.
We're now joined by Prime, also known as John Hina. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Looking at the idea of what an activist is, people have different ideas about what that looks like. And James has one idea and share a little bit about that. We just heard from Lisa. Would like to hear from you, too. When you picture an activist, what's an activist look like?
Well, for me, an activist has a spray can in his hand. And he'll, you know, for the kids that I work with, I tell them once you put your name on that wall, it's the beginning of activism. It's you making a statement to the public. And then we start to expand from that point. But it's a beginning, you know, it's an intro to activism. Because then, you know, I ask them, why are you doing this stuff? The reason why we did it in the 80s is way different than why they do it today. And
can you talk about that difference for a moment?
Sure. So in the 80s, you know, growing up, it was hip-hop was at its peak. I want to say it was thriving in Hawaii. And for guys like myself who wasn't connected to the Hawaiian culture, we were connected to hip-hop because hip-hop made us, you know, and then, of course, there's MTV that started up. And so we had this idea that, you know, we don't want censorship. We don't want people telling us what to do. And graffiti was that outlet, you know. So the ditches here in Hawaii, that was like my refuge for, you know, for expressing myself from all the peer pressure in school and at home. It was my getaway. And then the kids today, they're just doing it because it's cool. It's a fashion statement. There's no struggle behind the reason why you're doing it. Although it's being mimicked as if it was still in the 80s, but it's just not the same.
That seems to be a little bit at odds with what we just heard Lisa say, that there is this fire in the belly to get something done because the world isn't what they expected it to be. But for the kids that you're with,
yeah,
who are from lots of different backgrounds, socioeconomic strata, there isn't just one cut of kid that you're dealing with, but the common point is art and learning to make a statement through art that has, you know, social ramifications, not just being able to create something beautiful, although that certainly has enough ramifications on its own, too, for the rest of us in a very good way.
I think in the 80s, you know, it was as long as the sun is up, you're out. And once the sun goes down, you better be home. Today, it's like there's so many
reversed.
Kids going missing, you know, so parents, you know, they live in fear. So they lock up their kids. They're taught to be prisoners. If you look at our schools now, starting from the elementary schools, they're putting fences all around. And I question that. I feel like, are we really training our kids to migrate them eventually into the prison system, right? Because we never had fences around our schoolyard, you know, growing up, but these kids are.
Well, some would say, well, we have a whole different set of circumstances now with predators both on and offline and just far more people here and a lot more of the negative side that's migrated over from other places.
Yeah, and, you know, with technology, with the iPad, with the video games, they're just consumed with all of this stuff. So there's no real outlet, you know. And so once they go on the streets, it's just like, oh, I just want to do something just to do something.
Ergo the tagging that we've seen.
Right, you know, and it's different from when we did it. It was like, you know, this feels good. It feels right. I'm doing a collage of things that I truly honor. Yeah, so we had a lot of the art pieces going up in the 80s, and it spoke about different things, whether it's a beef that we had with someone else. It was more elaborate than today's stuff. Today's stuff is just, you know, I just want to write my name and I want to keep going bigger and bigger, but there's no foundation anymore. I think the foundation has kind of dwindled over the decades. And I feel like that's our fault because we never passed anything on to the next generation.
Which is what you've been trying to do through 808 Urban, correct, to give them a sense of being held by a safety net that teaches them how to deal with the world, but doing that through artistic means, but not fine arts, being able to do it with a spray can in your hand and create beautiful murals. Is activism growing out of that?
Yes. Yeah. Whether cultural, political, you know, each child. So,
because you are talking about children here. I mean, you're not necessarily like talking about someone who is, you know, 21 or 30. You're talking about somebody who is maybe 14 or 12.
Yeah, primarily high school students. That's what I work with. So these kids that are in high school, some come from the Philippines. So they understand the politics that's going on in the Philippines. And they found art as that vehicle to express the challenges and offer some kind of solution through these art pieces, and hopefully people will, you know, spread the message.
If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking about youth activism island style. Do you consider yourself an activist if you're young, or maybe if young at heart might be more appropriate to where you are now? But if you are on either side of that description, how do you view yourself relative to everybody else? How do you view your brand of activism compared to, say, the generation under 40, if you're over 40, and the other way around, if you're not? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. As you all look at where we are now, which is, what, a couple weeks away from a primary, we have an election year, things will really ramp up afterward. Do you find yourself adjusting at all to how you do the type of activism that you've been doing over these many years to be able to incorporate more of what's happening politically? Or is that actually in some ways immaterial if you're only working with grassroots and building that at this moment and not necessarily looking for some sort of solution that may come out of November? Lisa?
Well, yeah, I think I could speak to that because I'm actually spending my whole summer going door to door for the election. But if I could, I'd really like to go back to what John said, right? With the whole like comparing 90 or the 80s to now, I think a lot of people have that same view of what's going on at the moment and with the current generation. But you know, we're labeled
as... That's different.
Right. And we're much more apathetic in the iPads and the iPhones. And I think you painted a really good picture of the millennials, right? That's our generation. And we have a very, I don't know, we're very disempowered. And I think that label and that view of us actually... does kind of, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if we're told, you know, you're lazy and you guys are just on your phones all the time, and then we're like, fine, I'm gonna go on my phone then, you know, like, yeah. Like then it kind of feels like it kind of really I guess touched something in me, because I do face that stereotype a lot, and I do see a lot of my generation, you know, getting sucked into that. And I think the main thing that I'd like to get across is that if we got to stop saying that, like, I mean, it's in a lot of ways it's the truth.
Then why do we have to stop saying it? I mean,
I guess, yeah.
Would it be more appropriate, Lisa, for us to be saying, well, it's true in some cases,
right?
You know, the some but not all, and not trying to paint with this gigantic paintbrush that encompasses everybody, but to say, okay, there is an element that might do that, but right, there are also those that don't, even if you're in the minority.
Right. Well, I think, I guess I don't mean we got to stop saying that as a whole, but I think that's the only thing that's said. You know, we'll acknowledge, like me here, I'm a youth activist, but our story doesn't get told as often, and other youth need to know that there are people out there who care.
Kind of like while we're talking tonight.
Right.
Okay. Our number is 941-3689, 877-941-3689. If you are a youth activist and you have something to say about what Lisa just shared, then we want to hear from you too. Also, if you label yourself an activist of any sort, We want to hear what you have to say about those who may be in that youth activist group that you're looking over your shoulder and seeing. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. James Koshiba, you wanted to add something.
I just wanted
to
add something to what Lisa said and tie it back to your question about the election and politics. In the last election cycle, Kanu was doing work similar to what Lisa's doing this election cycle. Campus-based voter registration and turnout drives, door-to-door work. And I guess what I observed, or what we observed, was that it was less a matter of apathy, because apathy suggests that
you don't care
mm-hmm. right? And more a matter of cynicism, in the sense that people are feeling really so brokenhearted in a way that the system didn't work in the way they wanted to work, that they kind of felt like, well, no sense then. You know, no, what for are going to vote if it's going to be the same, you know, people in mm-hmm. office yeah. holding power the same way, talking about the same issues, you know? And so I think it was more a sense that if the system is broken, unless you can show me a way to effect change, then what's the point? And that's a little bit different than apathy, because it suggests that the key is to show people different paths on how they can make the change then,
how to
in
make
order
it
to
work.
Activate them. Yep.
All right. We're going to go to a few of our callers. On the phone now with us is Robert from Kalihi. If you'd like to be next, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
I had a question for the gentleman who was talking about the spray painting. I think his name was James, was it?
No, James is James Koshiba. We've got a lot of J's. We've got James Koshiba, and we have John Hina, also known as Prime. How about that? We can differentiate that pretty easily.
That's what it was, John. I was wondering, could you cite specific examples of where your program has helped the local economy?
And why is the local economy, in your mind, important in terms of activism,
any type, whether it be through the Philippines, like he was saying?
I work with kids in high school, and so the public high schools, you know, there's kids from different backgrounds, and some of my groups have Filipino, Micronesian, Samoan, so it's really diverse.
But it also means
what are they protesting or active? Is their activism pointed towards?
The way I look at it is instead of going up and just putting up a piece with your name on it, say something that you truly believe in and something that's dear to your heart. So for myself, it's culture, and that's how I teach them, is through the host culture, the Hawaiian culture. And then from that point, they expand out and start to connect the dots with their own individual culture.
So it's more for self-fulfillment than, spreading a word or something.
Well, perhaps it's a bit of both, because when you're talking about somebody who is 15, 16, 18 years old trying to find out what you even think about something or how something really appeals to you or doesn't, or what you may know about a certain issue, is all part of it, which you are approaching through art, being able to create something and then having them dig deeper behind that and not just make a pretty picture.
Yeah, graffiti's been always tied to the dark side. It's been separated from the community. And what I've been able to do over the past 7 years is connect the community with the kids, the elders with the youth, and kind of like build this this relationship that's been missing for a while, and this dialogue that should have started a long time ago between the older generation and younger generation. And so we build on that, and the kids, they take it. The hope is that they take the foundation that we've come from, or the foundation that we've built, and build upon that,
And find issues that they find compelling and become involved with that.
Right.
But from a basis of knowledge, not just because they're spouting off.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Robert. Tonight we're talking about youth activism. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that number. And from the neighbor islands or anywhere else, if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Jared calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Jared. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I wanted to give a big thanks to James and Prime for their dedication. I work for a service provider in Kalihi Valley, and also work with a lot of disadvantaged youth. So I've seen Prime's work and what he does with a lot of the youth, especially I think the recent mural that he did up close to KPT and how that kind of connects the community down there. But also just giving a lot of kids that are not able to find their, I guess, their path, you know, a way to communicate, a way to connect with other adults to help them find what is their direction in this world. And remember James speaking further about getting people active in the political system, because at times I also feel a little bit disenfranchised about what's happening there.
And if you can make a difference with doing what you do.
Exactly. And I guess the big thing there is if you're taking an active role, a recent one that's close to my heart is the recent DHS movement in regards to cutting people's benefits off. That's an active role that the community needs to take and let the legislators know that this action is not appropriate.
Hmm.
And when 4,000 mailings go out and people lose their health care, these are lives that we're talking about. This is not mm-hmm. something that is okay. And until the people of Hawaii get up and speak further and push the legislators to make changes, we're going to continue to see these types of actions taking place. So continue to do your great work, James and Prime.
Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully I'll speak with you guys soon.
Thank you.
Jared, thanks for the call. When Jared was talking, I mean, he uses terms, as many of us do, the community, the people of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We tend to lump this gigantic group together of people who have somewhat disparate views at times. Sometimes there's confluence, sometimes there isn't. But as we conflate all these things together, are we in fact losing sight of the fact that there's just those small acts that you do that we talked about at the top of the show, some of the things that no one will ever see, or that really, James, it's got to start with you. As I say, you know, charity begins at home. Many of our grandmothers told us things like that. But the idea that it's got to be something that you internalize and do and not just do for show.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was and is the philosophy of Kanu Hawaii. And I guess the larger kind of message related to what we're talking about is I feel like there's an activist in each of us. I mean, activism is you're passionate about something, you're frustrated about something, you're angry, you want to change something in the world around you, and you're looking for a vehicle to do that. And when you take the step from feeling frustrated inside to expressing it outside and hoping to rally other people to your cause, that's activism. And so I do believe, you know, a great place to start is with yourself, making sure you got integrity and you're aligned, your values and your actions are aligned with what you're activated about. But I guess the other piece of it that I feel like is really critical, and it's especially important when we're talking about public policy issues like the one the last caller just raised, is the way that political activism and debate happens these days, I feel like is part of what makes us feel cynical about the process sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can pick any issue that has inspired activism in the last two decades, whether it's the Super Ferry or GMO or Furlough Fridays or DHS cuts, and the way that conversation plays out on TV in sound bites and with mm-hmm. political leaders has a certain tone and style to it that makes people think, oh, if that's what activism is, then maybe I don't want to be a part of it. Really.
Well, because in some ways, I think what you're getting at is the way in which we talk to each other is not really activism. It's just simply trying to get your point across, shout the other person down, and not really have a discussion or a debate about it. Now, that kind of goes back to a couple of issues, one of them being civility. That has its own complement of issues that come with it, especially when you're in the heat of a moment and where other people may be whipping that frenzy even more to be able to get some of those sound bites. How do we just step back from that a little bit and really find that point of integrity from which the activism needs to flow, as you say, if there's really an activist in everyone?
Well, just real quick response to that. I mean, I think the idea of starting with yourself was that that's a really humbling experience, actually, to try to live with integrity to any kind of, you know, value that you feel passionate about is really challenging. And so if we're doing it and we know how hard it is for ourselves, then when we go tell somebody else, hey, you got to make this change, we're coming from a place of humility and self-awareness instead of just pointing the finger and saying, hey, you know what, here's what's wrong with the world and you got to go change it.
which kind of goes back to the point that we were making when we were talking to Jared, talking about these larger groups that we create in our head, you know, so the ubiquitous they. What does that mean when we start realizing that it's full of different people and different ideas? Mm-hmm. And how do we activate some of those ideas that we may share with others? We're talking about youth activism tonight and activism in general. If you are young at heart and get yourself involved with whatever it is that may drive you and compel you to be involved, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're listening to us from someplace other than on Oahu, that's the number to call. Going now to Amber, calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Amber. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you.
Did you have a question?
I do. I feel like there's kind of a stall in energy that young people have in advancing just in a lot of areas of life. I work for a company that's kind of small, and I feel like it's in Hawaii, the jobs are so competitive, and we try to have a sense of ohana, but I think that it's hard to advance wherever you are working. And I'm a recent college grad, and I guess I'm just struggling. I feel like a lot of the other recent grads that I know are also...
You're looking for a place, and maybe you were told, as a lot of entrants to college were told 4 or 5 years ago, that if you did all the right stuff, you'd come out and you'd find a place, and now you're not. So you've got some frustration. We can hear some of that in your voice. So you are employed now, which is better than a lot of people would say is happening with them. But there's also a frustration there. So are you finding issues that are speaking to you that are activating that activist in you?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of my friends are graduating and they have to move off island. They can't get jobs here. And what do we do to keep our people here and keep people together and working? And I feel like your career is part of your life growth. And if you do all these right things, but you can't make success happen, it just kind of stunts you in all areas. How do you care about advocacy when you can't even get your feet on the ground?
Amber, you brought up a lot of points. We're going to talk about it. Thanks very much for the call. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Amber has a whole bag full of things that we can unpack. But part of it is that she's here, got a job, is watching a lot of her friends have to leave Hawaii because they can't find jobs here and make lives here. And like a lot of kids who are told, you go to college, you do all this stuff, you do it right, there's going to be a life path for you. In some cases, maybe they got sold a bill of goods in that way, and realizing that, you know, life and all kinds of things happen, including what's out there in the world, and you have to learn how to respond to it better and not just say, here's my blueprint, as long as I follow it, life will be fine. And she's also looking for ways to take some of her own anger and frustration and do something with it. So, James, that seems to be a good question for you to talk about, because she's in that middle 20s age group. What does she do? What advice would you give her?
Well, I'm not sure I have the answer to the big overall question, but I guess one observation is that I think what she's part of the frustration she's voicing is a frustration about something we touched on earlier, which is the failure of systems to live up to what we expect them to do. I mean, our kind of educational and economic system, as an example, the storyline is, you know, we save up or borrow, we go to college, you finish college, you come out and you have a career path. And that system doesn't work that way anymore. And so for those of us who've experienced that and are frustrated by that, there's an opportunity then to use our collective voice to change systems like that. And I think that's the only way those kinds of systems and failures of systems actually change, is when people kind of rally together, get their frustration kind of aggregated and push it in a productive direction.
And the operative word is productive.
And for Amber, that might, and for others, you know, that are in their 20s, early 20s, or even just coming out of high school, that might be being an entrepreneur and carving your own path, or being an artist and finding another way to succeed and be fulfilled in life, being creative about how you define and find success is, to me, activism, along with activism in the political realm of trying to get policies to change those systems.
Yeah, Prime, totally
I want you to answer some of that too.
Yeah, you know, the students that I work with, I always tell the parents I'm not an art teacher. I suck at teaching art, but I want to teach creativity. Yeah, and
you're pretty good at teaching life too.
Right. But so I really push for them to realize their dreams before they head into college. Yeah, plan what is close to your heart, what is dear to your heart. If it's animals, then, you know, I don't know, maybe you might look into becoming a vet. But whatever it is, just be creative at whatever you do. Once you realize your dream or your whatever you're passionate about, and for me it's been art, but once you realize that dream, start using the education system to leverage yourself, to build it for yourself. Don't depend on building somebody else's
dream. I hear
dream.
You say make it work for you.
Right.
But you that implies that you have to be an activist in your own life.
Correct.
And that you really have to take charge. For a lot of kids, you know, they've been so shepherded through one way or other by their parents, by a school, by the state, however it may be, that taking back some of that power, and you mentioned earlier, Lisa, feeling that many in your generation have been somehow disempowered, that we don't give enough skills, and we also hover too much in a lot of ways.
Nah, not me. I pretty much throw them in a ditch. And
You do. But for a lot of parents, I mean, we have this horrible term, helicopter parent. People, I mean, constantly making sure that everything is going to go right with the kid, except you don't get resiliency skills if somebody is constantly being your net.
Yeah. You know, another thing that just came up is the private and public schools, the students. So, you know, I was working primarily with underprivileged or whatever that category means. I don't know. But I don't really believe in categories. So I took these kids from public school and mixed them up with the private schools. And now we don't see the difference between private and public. Yeah, there's the stigma that comes with the title. And I think art has been a way to bridge, you know, these two communities that otherwise grow up and then they start to become that 1%, 99%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we want to do is we want to keep them together and close, that community that we talked about earlier from childhood time. So when they grow older, they're going to tear down these walls that we've built, our generation has built to segregate, you know, the everybody's income. Yeah.
Or have it be income driven.
Right.
Or the strata based on income.
Yeah.
Tonight, we're talking about what does it mean to be a youth activist or an activist for youth. You're just listening to Prime talking about how he helps largely high school students to cope with life and to be able to create life paths for themselves and make choices, real choices, based on the things that make them happy, that are compelling to them. That's a very different conversation than many people have with their kids. And as they grow older, as Prime says, quite possibly, it might mean that they don't get to be the authors of their own lives, which is kind of not the case with you, Lisa Grandinetti. You seem to be taking life by the horns and pushing it forward to do the things that you want to, and you're still just in school.
Yeah, well, I actually I would like to say that about myself, but I do think I am in the same situation that, like, I hope she's still listening, but Amber was in. I think I'm trying to use whatever power that I can to organize the community. That's something that I really like to talk about, is just organizing. But as for Prime's comment, I think those kids, they do feel like they're stuck in that system. And like you were saying, like you actually mentioned the educational system too. But I do think Amber's frustrations were coming from a place of seeing that the system is just completely rigged against us. It's not even just that the systems have failed us, but they've completely changed around. And as for the education system and creativity, like Prime mentioned, stamping out creativity, I think, is one of the biggest things of disempowering the youth, because we need that to think critically about the situations that we're in and why we're in those situations and how we get out. And the thing that I wanted to say to Amber was that, to me, organizing was the answer. Finding leaders in the community and connecting them with other people, like you said, collective action, James. I think the only way that we can step up and, you know, demand things from our legislators and change the educational system and empower the youth is to have networks of activism, not just activism itself and not each person standing up on their own, but we really need to connect our passions to one another, because I think that all the frustrations we feel is just coming from a place of not being included in the conversation of where Hawaii's future is going, where, you know, everyone's leaving. And I think it's the main thing is that we're not making the decisions that affect Hawaii and Hawaii's
people. Or that will affect you in 10 years, 20 years.
Right, right.
When you're hopefully still here and making a living and,
right,
and being in Hawaii.
Right.
If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd like to have you. 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. Do you work with youth and help to foster activism? Are you an activist yourself? How do you see activism happening now differently than, as, for example, Prime was talking about a little earlier in the program, as it was being done in the 80s? What are you noticing about it? Are you involved? What would get you involved? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Keone, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hey, aloha, Bethan. Thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to say aloha to Prime and James. This is Keone from OEV TV.
Hey,
how's it going?
Mahalo you guys for the time and your guys, Manaho, because these guys are really on the trenches and in the ditches, so to speak, you know.
Well, what about you, Keone? Are you in the trenches too?
You know, a little bit. We co-founded a Native Hawaiian TV station, and we're a social enterprise trying to create change through media. And, you know, we've crossed paths with Prime and James over the years. And, you know, the question I wanted to throw onto the table, because I want to get their opinion on it, is, you know, like, there are a lot of us doing a lot of good work. There's this groundswell of, you know, socially driven initiatives, really amazing and innovative programs that are happening. But, you know, in isolation, we're doing really good work. But collectively, we're just not getting the kind of traction that I think all of us who are in the movement really want to see happening. You know, the progress is slow. So I just wanted to get these guys' opinion and their thoughts on what's the catalyst, what's the tipping point for all of us doing all of this work in the community to create the kind of critical mass necessary to create the change that we're looking for in Hawaii.
Keone, you ask a lot of good questions. And part of it that I would sort of ask as you are talking about all of this too is, we're often told that younger generations like to collaborate. What I'm hearing Keone say is that there's a lot of work being done in separate pockets, but there isn't this sense of collaboration or networking together. Is that true? Would you agree with that?
No, I think it's. I think there is a lot of collaboration going on, and I think that's really the key to success. But I wanted to get these guys' opinions on it because, you know, they're in the trenches. They know what it's about.
No, I know that, but I'm just asking the same sort of question back to them too, because it seems like we hear two very different perspectives on it. Either that there are great things going on, people cross paths periodically, but there isn't, as you've just said a moment ago, sort of this consolidated effort where people are able to come together in a greater mass, a greater number, and to move certain initiatives forward in a way that has a great deal of networking and collaboration behind it.
I think there is a lot of willingness to collaborate, and you know, just going back to what Lisa said just a minute ago about hooing up organizations, and I know what her organization at IKEA is doing is a lot about that, and so I think there is a willingness. I guess, you know, to answer Keone's question, you know, my own personal feeling is I think that's part of it, but I think there's also kind of an echo chamber that happens with activism and political activism in particular. So that there's kind of like-minded organizations that hooey up, but then the message only gets out so far because it's kind of within a circle of people that are already attuned to those messages. Mm. And I think the trick is to bust out of that bubble and reach a larger audience. And I think the work that Keone's doing is part of it, because I know you're trying to take messages and package them in a way that reaches a larger, broader audience, maybe an audience that's not normally listening for those messages. And I think that's
the key. You're talking about relevance.
Right, making it relevant to a new set of audiences that don't think of themselves as activists, and broadening the base of support for the kind of systems change that Lisa was talking about.
Prime, I know he wanted you to answer that too.
Yeah, so the way I see it is, it's like following the stream from Mauka to Makai, and we have the folks up in the mountains, then we have the folks down in the ocean. And I think the catalyst is that relationship, that understanding, the mutual understanding between, you know, the folks that are up top and the folks that are on bottom, that we all need to take care of this vital source that's coming through. But there's different streams throughout the whole island, so you have different communities with the same understanding. So it's like the way I see it is the farmers will be together with the fishermen. They have a close relationship, and then they trade, and that's how we collaborate. And then this farmer will learn from another farmer in a different district something else, and then, you know, that's how we share ideas on a broader community. And that's how I see this whole thing working, is what kind of relationships are we going to pick. And the thing that I've seen over the past 7 years is that we ourselves have moved so fast that we haven't been able to really set foot in those relationships and really build them strong enough. And I feel like we need to slow down. I feel like we're moving too fast for our own good, and we're not getting anything done. And we need to go back to just slowing it down and making these relationships more meaningful. So that way, you know, it resonates.
Because it also takes some time to be able to build trust and to be able to build those relationships.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. It's not like instant coffee. Lisa.
Yeah, I feel like I should have mentioned this earlier, but I'm part of the IKEA movement, like James mm-hmm. mentioned. It's really just a movement of working class people trying to take back power in Hawaii, because we feel like we don't have any power right now, because we're all, you know, working too hard, and we're focusing on all the struggles we're facing, and we can't really connect with one another, like Prime was talking about, the personal relationships. And as for Keone's question, Keone, right? Yeah, I think it's a question we're all really facing, but like how do we build power? How do we really take Hawaii back? And like I mentioned before, I think that the answer is organizing. Like I was saying about how the education system is broken, like James mentioned, I think one of the things that is really holding us back from making a change is that organizing is never taught. And when we learn about social movements like in the 70s and any social progress, we kind of just hear of like very like the key leaders and like the bills that were passed. But we don't really talk about how they were passed, how many people it took talking to one another just over coffee and building trust with each other and building relationships to really understand one another and connect in a way that they can move forward in the same direction without, you know, like bickering. And
right, but Lisa, do you really need that? I mean, you're a smart girl, and sitting down at a kitchen table with a couple of other smart people that you like and trust, who have similar interests, mm-hmm. isn't that really where it starts? Do you need to be taught that?
Yeah, well, I actually do think we need to be taught that, because, I think Prime said about like the iPads and everything, where we've seen examples of how like Facebook can be used as an organizing tool, but we kind of get sucked into like inviting people through Facebook, inviting, like being on email lists, and
not being face to face with someone, saying, "Hey, let's sit down and talk about this."
Right, and I do think it is very much a generational thing, so going back to just having lunch with someone is, I think, pretty revolutionary, actually. I think.
And you got a lot of parents who are listening to you saying, yeah, we knew that those social skills were going away. And now we've got somebody who's a 20-something saying so,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I'm actually 18. I think.
That's right. It's your sister who is older. See, I confused
you.
She's
24.
Sister.
Yeah. Yeah, but we don't necessarily need to be taught in school that this is how it works. But But I do think looking at past examples of how such huge social changes can be made, and that's really just talking to people and seeing how they feel and seeing where we can all go collectively.
All right. Well, we're going to talk to some people now, and if you would like to join the conversation, you can, but you better do it sooner rather than later. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Bethany calling us from Kihei. Aloha, Bethany, and thank you for your patience.
Hi there. Aloha. Thanks for having me on the show. I wanted to add to the discussion. I highly respect Maui, where I'm living now. I've been here for about 2 years, and I'm actually moving very soon to progress with an educational position where I was born and raised in New Hampshire. That's primarily one, because I'm able to find the job there, and I'm seeking the job in New Hampshire, and two, because I honestly don't feel like I want to raise children here. Quite honestly, I understand this is my own opinion, but I feel like the educational system here in Hawaii is not up to par to what I was born and raised with. And I'd like to hear everyone's opinion on if they agree with that or if they feel like that's just a very strange way to think, especially for someone that doesn't live here. And also I'd like to hear from everyone else on the panel how they feel about people moving here, transients who lived on the mainland and grew up on the mainland and coming here and altering the way that tradition has been taught and how they feel about that.
Okay, you've asked a lot of questions, Bethany. We're going to get to some of them, but I really want to narrow this down to the idea that if you have certain feelings about however you may find Hawaii, what it is that you do about them and how you choose a path to be able to fulfill some of those ideas or hopes for where you are. Obviously, you've made a choice, and it's I'm sure, a very tough one to do given how you feel about Maui. But as you look at some of these questions that she's brought up, and they could take us into other hours of conversation, mm-hmm. so I don't want to see this co-opted into that. But there are people who are very concerned about people moving here from wherever and that it's changing the character of Hawaii. There was a study probably at least 10 years ago that the Hawaii Community Foundation did in trying to prepare the nonprofit community for what nonprofits were going to be really of value to Hawaii as Hawaii changed. And one of the things that came out of that was that, at least then, the idea was the closer we came to 2020, which is now only 5.5 years away, we would see that there would be more people who would be coming to Hawaii than were born in Hawaii, and that the whole complexion of Hawaii, no pun intended, would be changing, and that would be felt in a great many ways, from sensitivities in the marketplace to sensitivity to being able to create the kind of Hawaii that many people who have grown up here remember would like to see perpetuated. So all of this, woven together can activate people in many different ways. With the questions that she's asked, insofar as it's concerning activism, how do you take all that angst? I mean, we talked about this a little earlier. You talked about just a moment ago, Lisa, saying we don't really know how to organize. Are we missing a step in all of this to be able to take some of this stuff that's living in people's guts and being able to do something constructive and productive with it?
I think it's actually the step that John was talking about a minute earlier, about the relationship building piece. And to me, it goes back to shared values. And that's where I think there's actually a lot of hope and promise for Hawaii. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the transients of a population, new people coming, other people going, that's just a reality of the demographic change in Hawaii that we have to embrace. But I think the thing that Hawaii has going for it, that not every community has going for it, is that people who either are born and raised in Hawaii and choose to stay here or move to Hawaii and choose to put down roots here and live here, they all choose to be here for a reason. We're all here for a reason, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep. We made a choice.
Yeah. Island living ain't easy, you know? I mean, between the cost of living and, feeling frustrated about different aspects of life here, but there are wonderful things about Hawaii that make us choose to live here because they resonate with our values, whether that's because we can go outside and commune with nature, or we like being in a diverse community where there's all kind of cultures that we can relate to and borrow from, or what have you. There are certain things about this place that makes people choose to be here for a reason, and that choice is the basis for building a really powerful community of shared values like aloha, like kuleana. Everybody feels a connection. Anybody that lives here and stays here feels a connection to those things as part of the reason why they're here. And that can be the basis for really powerful activism if, like John said, we take the time to actually connect with each other on that level and talk about, hey, what are our values? What values do we have in common? Beyond the what issues do we care about and what kind of impact do we want to have on this particular policy? Mm. Are our values connecting? And if so, then let's team up and push for the kind of change that stems from that.
You're also talking about, though, a lot of FaceTime. And I don't mean the kind that comes with an Apple thing, whatever Apple thing you may have. We're talking about the real thing where we look at each other eyeball to eyeball and sit down and spend some time. Now, that's not been the ethos of a lot of people's experience with activism. It's been more of, hey, there's going to be a meetup here, or there's going to be this or whatever, and they may hear about it through social media. Maybe that'll get them to someplace, but it may not be the kind of more intimate kind of talk that you seem to be advocating.
Actually, I have a little bit different view of that. I think it actually can happen online and using technology. I think there are plenty of online communities and forums that have sprung up around shared values. Mm. It's just that the dots are rarely connected between that conversation about, hey, we got these shared values, and hey, let's be activists around this. The activism conversation tends to be kind of topical and issue-based. Then the values-based conversation is kind of, you know, community. And bringing the two together is, I think, where the magic is, and I don't think we do enough of that.
You seem to think, though, Lisa, that you need to have more time face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. Well, this reminds me of a study that I recently read about surveying people who actually do come out to, like, rallies and everything, and what brought them there. And a lot of times a Facebook invite is not effective. You know, it was something like 3 to 5% actually came out from an email or Facebook.
Forgetting who invited them via the Facebook.
Right. But those were very impersonal, you know. I do think Facebook can be used as personal messages, you know. We were actually speaking before the show about using Facebook for that. And I think as long as it's more of a personal relationship, then that's how organizing gets done, as long as we're speaking personally to each other.
All right. Well, we're going to speak personally right now to Luana calling us from Kalihi. A lot of Kalihi callers tonight. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Luana, for your patience. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, this is a great conversation. I just wanted to support Lisa's observations. I think she's been very on point. I don't know if you remember me, but I was a teacher at Kalaheo High School. I taught peer education.
Yep.
And a few of the youth were interested in doing a mural.
Yep.
And, you know, what was really needed for that to happen was initiative. And what I found was I went into that very naive, because what I saw from the beginning is that youth are very aware. Mm-hmm. There is a fire in them. They do know what's going on around them, and they do know what they want and what they don't want. But what's lacking is their ability to confront, their creativity skills, their ability to question. And all of that happens because they're constantly, they're constantly discouraged from even questioning the most basic concept, principles, anything in their classrooms. And they were always coming to me, talking about, you know, their experiences with teachers who really discourage critical thinking and questioning. Mm. And after that happens, after a while, you know, you just stop. And so I thought, you know, great, I'll come into this classroom, we'll do all these projects, we'll get out in the community. But what I had to spend most of my time doing was instilling in them the confidence to question, to, you know, imagine a different scenario and then enact it. And after I taught at Kalaheo, I taught at the Native Hawaiian charter schools, and it was such a big contrast from what I see in the public schools. I mean, they are really producing very constructive and confident young people who are going to be activists and who are going to be making changes in the community. And that's not to say that's not happening in the public schools, but their mindset, their pedagogy is so much different. Their focus is so much different, whereas, you know, they are focused on academic progress, but they're focused on the community and producing grounded individuals.
Luella, I'm going to stop you right there for the moment, just because. No, that's okay. I know we could talk for quite a long time, but we're coming up to almost the top of the hour. Thanks very much for the call. I want to get all of us to just kind of come back to this idea of activism, because I'm wondering if we're using this word activism and we really mean how to be a citizen in your community, something that, you know, once upon a time used to be sort of, you know, civics or citizenship or other things that had other names at other times, where people were taught how to behave in a community. And some of those issues that you brought up, Lisa, about, well, we don't know how to organize, we don't know how to do this anymore. Some of the real basic sort of people-to-people, person-to-person mm-hmm. activities that we just don't have in this rush to have certain, you know, core standards met or whatever it may be, the idea somehow that if you do all the right things, you'll get the right job. And that's proved to be a fallacy, at least in the short term. Mm-hmm. How do we get some of that happening? Because what I'm hearing from some of these callers is that, you know, this is not being supported in a school environment unless you have a very specified school where this is valued. So what do you take away from this? Or what advice do you have?
I guess just two thoughts. One is, I think it's good that we kind of broaden the definition of activism, but I also don't want to make it sound like activism is anything that you do in your life. I mean, I think ultimately, if we narrow it back a little bit and talk about political activism or activism designed to change
social
systems
change.
And communities around you, then you are talking about collective action. Mm-hmm. And I think collective action requires the kind of skills that Lisa was talking about. But the other thing I think is that collective action, inspiring collective action takes is creativity and kind of heroic acts of self-sacrifice. And those two things, the creativity and the heroic acts of self-sacrifice, I think are what we're short of today. And so as examples, I mean, think of the kinds of actions that sparked the Hawaiian cultural and political renaissance.
Or the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a, you know, handful of people risking their lives, landing on Ko'olawe and communicating, we love this island so much that we're willing to risk ourselves to do it. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that kind of, as much of that kind of activism. And that's why I'm glad to be sitting at the table with these two guys, Lisa and Prime, because I think they're pursuing the kind of creative activism that we need to see more of.
You've got 30 seconds each because we're just about ready to say goodbye. If you had advice for anyone to get involved, how do they start?
With
being an activist, something that bothers them.
Once you define that and then figure out, you know, your path. For, you know, as far as the art is concerned and my students, we're focusing on the healing. I think we've been active so long that we just need to start healing. And we're not bringing, you know, spirituality into this whole conversation because everything is face-to-face. And we've lost a sense of belief. Yeah, we've lost our belief in God, you know, and we don't have that conversation enough on today's dinner table.
Mm. Lisa?
There's so much I'd like to say about what you guys have said, but I
you
really
got
like
30
that,
seconds.
Right. I really like that teacher because I was actually organized by a teacher. And I think the main thing that she was talking about was like that creativity and critical thinking. And we need to think critically and then talk to one another, like I keep emphasizing. Identify leaders who can really spark that same creativity in others and then have them talk and then have everyone talk and then, you know, figure out what we want from life and from Hawaii and then go for it collectively.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Lisa Grandinetti, thank you for being here. Prime and James Koshiba, we should have another conversation about all this. And you know what? We probably will. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock for The Conversation. Meanwhile, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.